New leaked footage shows Israeli leaders calling to go scorched earth on their own people on October 7th. This is what's known as the Hannibal Directive, and yet Israel continues to produce highly edited films about what happened to them on October 7th without taking responsibility for what they actually did. Ben Swan is an investigative journalist and the host of America Now. He's been reporting this for years. He knew right away that Israel attacked its own people, and he explains this footage. Thank you so much for joining me. I really enjoyed your report. Can you tell us what this footage shows and how it plays into what you've known for years about the Hannibal Directive?
Yeah, absolutely, Natalie. Thanks for having me on. There's a couple of things I think that are very interesting about this. You know, we came across this footage, as you mentioned, recently, but 2 years ago, we were reporting on the Hannibal Directive and trying to explain to people what was happening specific to the attack on the Nova Musical Festival on October 7th, the claims that the Israeli government made that these attacks that happened came strictly from Hamas, that all the Israeli deaths were at the hands of Hamas. And therefore, it justified the aggressive and violent and almost barbaric response from Israel, right? Because they had to respond in some way to these monsters. But when you start looking at the evidence of what happened that day, there's a lot wrong with the official narrative. And the Hannibal Directive is just part of that. So let's talk about that part. You asked about specifically new footage. Let me tell you about the new footage, and then I'll back up and kind of explain where this all comes from. But the new footage is essentially a documentary film crew that happened to be there on October 7th, kind of in the situation room, if you will, as the Israeli government is responding to the attacks from Hamas. Why would they have a documentary film crew standing by recording all of this? Who knows? No one's explained exactly why that was the case, why Ben-Gvir was being followed around by a documentary film crew, but he was. And so there they are, you know, there's the situation room moment, and they're all kind of sitting there, and they're talking about the attack that's happening, and specifically hostages who have been taken, including Israeli soldiers who have been taken hostage, and the fact that they are now, there's this line of cars on a highway leaving the Nova Music Festival. And so when Ben-Gvir is asked about what they should do, he says, break it all apart along with the soldiers who were abducted. Break it all apart along with the soldiers who were abducted. Now, that is the Hannibal Directive. He doesn't say the words Hannibal Directive, but that is the Hannibal Directive. So the Hannibal Directive, for people who don't know, is the concept is based on the general from Carthage, Hannibal, right? And the concept is because Hannibal refused to be taken prisoner and would rather commit suicide and have his soldiers commit suicide than be taken prisoner, because there would be no prisoner swaps and no POWs. That's the concept. And so the idea for the Hannibal Directive is that years ago, Hamas would come over and they would kidnap Israeli soldiers, right? There was one case in particular, I think they took 10 or 12 Israeli soldiers hostage, and in exchange, they got 1,000 prisoners back in exchange, yes. Right? And at a certain point, the Israeli government made a decision, and this is a factual, historical record, made a decision to say, we're not doing that anymore. We're not going to allow these hostage negotiations to take place. We're not going to trade soldiers for prisoners. And so they instituted something called the Hannibal Directive. And the concept is, if a soldier is taken hostage, you kill the hostage takers. And if the hostage dies, the hostage dies. But we would rather kill our own one soldier or 10 soldiers than hand back 1,000 prisoners that we've captured. That is the concept behind the Hannibal Directive. And so on October 7th, we now have this documentary footage, by the way, where when Ben-Gvir realizes he's being recorded, he asks, wait, are you recording and are you filming me? He says, and he says, you can film me when I give you permission. Please take this off, turn this off. And they turned it off, the camera off at that point. But he'd already said what he had said, which was break it all apart along with the soldiers who have been abducted. The Hannibal Directive says we will kill whoever we have to kill, Israeli citizens, soldiers, whoever we have to, in order to prevent there from being this attempt to take hostages and have a negotiation. So going back 2 years, when we had looked at it, we had said, clearly the Hannibal Directive has been instituted. By the way, YouTube took down our video, Facebook took down our video, Vimeo deleted it off their servers. They wouldn't even allow us to have the video stored on their servers because we mentioned the Hannibal Directive. That's a conspiracy theory. That's not a real thing. This is, you know, anti-Semitic to claim that Israel does this. It's anti-Semitic. Israel has a directive that they have, that yes. they're on the record for having. And there's so much on the record that as of 2016, they officially declared they would no longer use the Hannibal Directive because it was too barbaric. So okay. there's no historical question about the fact that the Hannibal Directive existed. The question, the right question would be, are they still using it? On October 7th, how do we know they used it? Because when Hamas came across the border, remember they came across in these little like fan planes, makeshift fan planes to get across. They crawled underneath gates. They came over on motorcycles.
We had interviewed a family that left just before October 7th because they felt threatened by their own government and they thought something bad's going to happen. They just knew it. And so they left, but they had family still in Israel. And there were reports that Hamas came over on donkeys, literally donkeys. Yeah. So that you can't actually vaporize a freeway on a donkey. I mean, I haven't tried, but I'm pretty sure you can't.
Pretty sure you can't. You can't vaporize a freeway full of cars with AK-47s either. You can shoot them up, but you can't burn them. And the claim that even if you shoot those cars and they blow up, you know, because the fuel tanks blow up, it doesn't melt the engine block. A burned out car is not the same as a melted car and melted engine blocks, which is what we saw. Well, what can do that? Well, Apache Hellfire missiles can do that, the kind that are on Israeli helicopters. And so when you see this line of cars, this highway coming out of the Nova Festival that was burned, which Hamas was blamed for, Israel said, well, this is what Hamas did to us. And therefore, again, it creates a reason and a justification for how we're going to respond in Gaza. But it was very clear at the time. It was the Hannibal Directive. And I think this video demonstrates that it was as well.
Well, you can see what happened when there were hostages to exchange. This was Hamas's intention, is we will exchange your people from ours. And it drew the attention of the world to the fact that Israel detains women, children, young men on the basis of what they call administrative detention without charge or trial. And now they're moving towards executing them, which I guess is further useful because they cannot exchange these prisoners if they just put them to death. And so, you know, I just use the term prisoner. They're not charged with anything. We don't know that they're criminals. They just take them off the streets. So they are hostages too. And this was really bad for Israel, for those of us who didn't know, I knew, but for many people who didn't know just how many people were in Israeli custody, right?
Right. No, I think that's absolutely true. The problem that Americans have is that the way we've been sold the concept of Israel as a government, as a political entity, is as if this is an offshoot of the United States of America. It is not. Israel does not have a constitution like the United States has. Israel does not have freedom of speech. Israel does not have the requirement that you face your accuser in court, due process laws. They don't have those things like we do in the United States. And so Americans who hear about this, they make assumptions. Oh, well, in Israel, I'm sure it's the same as it is here. You would assume so. It's not. And so when you see the number of prisoners who were taken, when you see the way that people are captured, executed on the streets, young men who were just shot to death and with soldiers standing around them smoking, right, as they die, there's no follow-up afterwards. There's no investigation. There's no body that's been, you know, established in Israel to say we need to make sure that there aren't human rights abuses taking place. I mean, these are all Americanized concepts that we are assuming to be true of Israel that are not true of Israel.
Have you ever looked at the day's big investment stories and wished that you got in earlier? Maybe it was AI or SpaceX. It seems like every time you find out someone's talking about it, it's too late for you to get in and make money. But what if the next opportunity isn't the headline? It's what's making the headlines possible. I'm talking about silver. Silver is a critical material behind the AI revolution, and it's used in all the technology that powers the data centers, advanced electronics, robots, robotics, and the infrastructure that AI depends on. And if AI keeps growing the way it's predicted to, demand for silver will grow right along with it. But here's the thing, you don't want to start learning about this too late. Silver's price prediction is still $150 an ounce. That's why we want you to get a copy of Lear Capital's free report called The AI Revolution. It explains why so many investors are taking a closer look at silver and what could be driving this demand in the years ahead. So call now to get your free copy. Call them at 800-613-3557. While you're on the phone, you want to ask them how you could qualify for up to $20,000 in bonus silver. So don't wait until it's too late and until you see it in the headlines. We're telling you. Learn this for yourself. Call them 800-613-3557 or go to LearRedacted.com. One more time, that's LearRedacted.com. You know, the presence of this film crew, it forces us to ask how much they knew. Now, I was in Egypt on October 7th, and the Egyptian government was saying, we've been warning you. We've been warning you all along, and it happened. We don't know why you didn't do anything about it. Yeah. And now we see these interactive experiences, these traveling shows like a King Tut exhibit, but it's called the October 7th Experience, highly edited, a lot of footage from that day. How can you not be suspicious that they already had a film crew in place? And, you know, talk about how they're using this narrative in a really disrespectful way to the actual victims on both sides of that day.
Yeah, well, if I can speak to the Egyptian part. So there is a record, right, historical record, that Egypt absolutely warned Israel about this almost 2 years before it happened.
Yes.
The thing is, Israel had the blueprint for the October 7th attacks because of IDF and Mossad agents who were basically undercover with Hamas, were able to get the access to these documents. And they knew almost 2 years in advance this was coming. In fact, in our original reporting, so we did a 7-part series on October 7th. Hannibal Director was one of those seven. But one of them, we explain essentially how this whole thing began in the first place, which is that Israel knew about it 2 years in advance. They created an entire division of the IDF that was focused on nothing but preparing for this attack because they knew it was coming. They did not know the exact day it was coming. They didn't know it was October 7th, but they knew roughly when it would be. And by the way, everything in those plans that was published even at the time, and some of the Israeli media knew about it, that Hamas followed it to a T. Well, you're talking about the donkeys and the motorcycles and the little, you know, makeshift fan planes that they're flying over the border, exactly what they were planning to do. Hamas was running exercises just across the border, right, from where that Nova Music Festival was held. They were running that for months. They were running exercises, people who live there. So remember, in Israel, so many people serve in the IDF at some point, right? And all these people who were living along that border were making record and contacting the government to say, we can see them. They're practicing kidnapping soldiers. They're practicing kidnapping people. They're practicing getting across the border. It got to the point that in the area where this was all happening, that the Israeli government made it illegal for average citizens to have the radios to listen to the traffic because they could listen to the traffic and knew exactly what Hamas was doing. They could hear it. And so they made it illegal for them to listen to radio traffic in those communities.
Wait, so, okay, you can't say you represent your own people if you're preventing your own people from knowing about an impending attack on them. That's diabolical. You can't know this. You have to be the bait. Is there any other way to see that?
It's exactly what it is. They knew that these communities were going to be attacked. They were preparing for it. None of it's hidden. That's the other thing, is all this was there's so much record of this. When we did this series, you know, one thing that was fascinating to me, we did not use a single source that was not Israeli. Every single source we used was Israeli reports, government reports, and Israeli media. And all of it was right there. The public should have known, they could have known, and many times in cases, they did know this was happening, and they were threatened. If you contacted the IDF and said, we see this happening. We know something's going to happen here. People were being threatened with the government with arrest for making these reports. They knew it was coming. They needed it to happen. So the misnomer is, did Israel cause October 7th? No. Did Israel know October 7th was going to happen? Yes. Did they allow it to happen for their other purpose? Absolutely. The record, I think, absolutely shows that.
And there is an outrage, an outcry inside of Israel that we're not allowed to know about, because many Israelis understand that they were used as bait in order to justify this continued aggression and clearing out of Gaza. It's just largely ignored, or they call these people fringe, but they can't break out. Now we have such a wall around the information there. You know, I don't know if you saw the documentary that was on the Tucker Carlson Network about the Netanyahus, but Benjamin Netanyahu does admit that he funds Hamas through indirect channels.
Oh, yeah.
And so I don't think that this is controversial anymore. It's interesting that you were punished for saying it 2 years ago, and it's upsetting. I mean, we had to abide by similar rules around the war in Ukraine early on. Right. We couldn't say that Ukraine was attacking their own people. That was literally in YouTube's terms of service. Now you can say that because it's true. So who's setting these rules of what we're allowed to know, who we can sympathize with? What do you think about this?
Yeah, well, I mean, obviously, this is the biggest problem with tech companies is we don't know who makes these determinations. Who's telling the algorithm what you can and cannot say? Who's telling? Because so many of the flags that come up, so many of the when the shadow bans hit you, so much of that is created by the algorithm and enforced by the algorithm, not by a human. There isn't a human watching and saying, oh, you mentioned the Hannibal Directive. So someone's already putting this information in there. Anyone who mentions Hannibal Directive, it automatically is just purging that content, suppressing it, and removing it. As you said, same thing with Ukraine, same thing with anything about vaccines on YouTube or Google, right? You if you mention anything, they remove you. And so it's very frustrating that happens, because so much of this, again, isn't even done in hiding anymore. So much of what happened on October 7th, there's a third thing I actually would like to mention, which is, you know, Israel knew. They didn't stop it, but they absolutely knew. Again, we absolutely proved that. The Hannibal Directive was absolutely used. But the third thing is the stand down order. There was absolutely a stand down order that was made that essentially would not allow IDF soldiers to go into the kibbutz communities that were under attack while Hamas was in those communities. They absolutely stood down. Remember, Israel was a country the size of New Jersey. The original Nova attack happened around 6 or 7 o'clock in the morning. There are kibbutz communities that were being basically held hostage, and people were being attacked and killed in those communities, where IDF soldiers showed up on the outside of those communities and stayed outside until 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock, one of them 10 p.m. at night. They did not go in until then. There's reports from IDF soldiers who say that there was a group of them that defied their commander, who told them to stand down and wait. They got in their truck and they just headed out. They were probably about, they said, an hour or two from one of those communities, so they just headed there. And the soldier writes about this and says, we assumed that when we hit the highway, it was going to be nothing but military vehicles headed to the rescue. We were the only ones. There was nobody else going. And so,
were they punished? Do you know if they were punished?
I don't know. I actually don't know what happened. Because again, this was a statement he had made to a reporter in Israel who had cataloged. I didn't speak to him personally.
Sure.
But the fact that Israel knew it was happening, the fact that they would kill their own and not allow them to be taken hostage, is already a horrific thing. But to know that your people are also being attacked and dying, and you give the order, let it happen, right? In fact, and this is also frustrating and horrifying, but maybe not too surprising once you start to see the pattern here, Israel was already conducting operations in Gaza, attacking sites in Gaza on October 7th, before going into many of those kibbutz communities. That was their response. Rather than going in and rescuing the people who were being attacked and being killed, their own people, they were already conducting operations inside of Gaza.
I don't think I knew that. Okay, how do we know that? And
well, because you can look at the timeline. You can look at the timeline.
They started right away.
We know that by 10 or 11 o'clock in the morning, there were already operations taking place where targets were being struck inside Gaza by the Israeli military. There are kibbutz communities that at 5 o'clock, 7 o'clock, and 10 p.m. at night, IDF soldiers had still not gone into.
Yeah. Okay. And so that's not the social contract of a government.
Right.
You are used as bait, and we will go and get our aggression that we've been wanting all along. It's outrageous to think that, I mean, who's anti-Semite here? They don't care about their own people.
Right.
Then they don't care about the lives of Jewish lives or anything like that. That's just our social contract is such that we pay taxes, we abide by the laws of the government in order for them to provide us basic safety and security infrastructure. And that's not a thing there. And that's, you know, that's why you do see, and again, this is something the media won't let us know about. There is an exodus of Israelis from Israel. There are people, you know, I think this is worth commenting on, because otherwise the general sentiment of the population that sees this thinks that all Israelis are complicit, and they are not. And I think it's important to make that distinction. They are afraid of what their government has done, I'm sure. They understand they were used as bait, and they leave. We've had them on the show before. There are many. It's not a culture of mono thought, even though there are Israelis who support the extremist government of Netanyahu, right?
Sure. Well, and the other thing is, how do you even know who in the public is against it? Because again, as I mentioned earlier, they don't have free speech in Israel. In fact, there's videos. We just put up a video the other day of, it was a group of young men who were protesting the war in Gaza and Israel moving into Lebanon. They went into the street to protest, and they were just beaten bloody with batons by IDF soldiers, right? They're on the ground just beating the hell out of these guys because you're not allowed to protest publicly there. So how do you even know where people stand when you don't have a system built into your country that allows for the protection not only of speech, as we do here in the United States, but the right to protest? We enshrined in the First Amendment of our Constitution is that right to protest or redress of grievances. We actually have that built into our system, but it doesn't exist there. And so if you stand up and say, I'm against this, I'm going to the street to say, no more, this has to stop, you can find yourself in prison. You're not allowed to do that there. By the way, same is true of Ukraine as well.
Yes, and you can't leave. I've told many times the story of Mordecai Vanunu, but I think it's worth shouting from the rooftops. He spoke to the press in the 80s, warning the world that Israel had a nuclear program and that it was secret, even though it's the worst kept secret in Hollywood, in Washington, which is the same
thing.
Yeah. And he's been prosecuted, thrown in jail many times, sought asylum with European countries, denied asylum. No one will let him leave. So, we don't know who the dissidents are and how they would be punished to the same tune of the way that Palestinians are punished. It's just worth continuously reminding ourselves that I'm sure it's really terrible to live under the Netanyahu government, too. You're not just like, well, we're committing a genocide. Life's great, right? I'm sure they're afraid, too.
Oh, without question. Listen, anybody... And by the way, it's not just Netanyahu, right? Because, at one time it was Naftali Bennett. Naftali Bennett wants to be prime minister again. And I know a lot of people would be excited to see Netanyahu gone. But sometimes the devil right, is better than the devil you don't. And in the case of Naftali Bennett, he wants all-out war with Turkey, which looks like it may be on the verge of happening now as well. And so... But the people of Israel have no say in anything. They have no say in what their government is doing. They have no ability to stop this from happening. They live under, right now, the bombings coming from Iran. Over the last few months, they've had to live under that. They've had to live in a place where they don't know whether their government is protecting them. And is all of this just so that Netanyahu doesn't go to prison? So he can keep avoiding the court system and he can keep avoiding these corruption charges he's facing? Are people living under that? Again, this is something that as Americans, it's so easy for us to sit under this very highly sanitized conversation about what Israel is. Israel is the shining light on the hill, the you know, city on the hill that we can all look to and say, wow, there's God's chosen people. Everything's great there. When in fact, it's like the country has enormous problems and it is, I would not call it a democracy. And even if it is a democracy, it is certainly not a constitutional republic where the people and the laws of the country protect the people from the government. It is not that place.
No, you can't collect rainwater on your roof. Water is considered the property of the government. Let's take a quick break. I want to talk about the Samson option, because if current Israeli leaders are willing to deploy the Hannibal directive, then more extreme things are at foot here. So let's take a quick break and talk about that in a second, please. We want to tell you about our friends over at Keet.io. It is a secure messaging system that you can use for your most precious chats. Now think about what happens in your family chat in a normal week. Pickups, vacation plans, photos, medical updates, addresses. You trust the people in that group, but how much do you trust the company operating the platform? Well, Keet gives families another option. It's a free messaging and video calling app built peer-to-peer with end-to-end encryption and no centralized company database holding the family conversation. Keet doesn't track metadata, and nobody needs to provide a phone number or an email to join. You just create a family group, and then you can share your files and photos and make audio or video calls, all without turning your home life into another corporate data profile. So check it out for yourself at keet.io/redacted. That's Keet, KEET.io/redacted. Download it for free. Just invite someone you trust and start a conversation that belongs to you. We also want to tell you about Brightcore Nutrition, because did you know that the U.S. life expectancy peaked at 78 years in 2014 and has been declining ever since? Of course, people are aging faster than ever due to so many reasons: toxins, chemicals in the soil and food, and other external factors. But scientists have recently discovered the healing power of kimchi that slows the aging process of human cells. It helps protect them and delays aging at the cellular level. That's why we're so excited to be sponsored by Kimchi One. Each capsule delivers over 900 probiotic strains, plus antioxidants and enzymes that support your digestion, metabolism, and skin health from the inside out. Of course, as we age, we become more susceptible to microbial threats, but Kimchi One is a natural antimicrobial while boosting immunity and energy. Best of all, Kimchi One is 100% made in the USA with all natural, non-GMO ingredients. It supports your gut, protects your cells, and helps you feel younger every day. You can try it for yourself. Go to brightcore.com/redacted or scan the QR code on your screen. You'll get 25% off. Make sure you use the code redacted. If you call them, you can get even more, 50% off, in fact, plus free shipping. Call them at 888-404-6312. Again, you can call them or go to brightcore.com/redacted. Make sure you use the code redacted. Before the break, we talked about the Hannibal Directive, that it is now proven that Israeli leaders enacted on October 7th, which means that they did not protect their own people. In fact, they ordered their deaths in large part. Did Hamas kill Israelis? Absolutely. But how was Israel complicit in this? How did they allow it to happen in order to get the clearing out of Gaza that we see now before our very eyes, live streamed? Now, we talked about the Samson option, which is Israel's nuclear doctrine that says that, you know, if we're going down, we're going to use the nuke. It's you know, all for one, basically, in not the honorable way. So can you tell us about the Samson option? Do you think that this is something that Israeli leaders would deploy because we've seen them do such demonic things?
Well, I think they absolutely would deploy it. I think that one of the reasons that the Trump administration in many ways is being held hostage. Now, that's not to take away their responsibility for the decisions they've made in this war with Iran. But one of the reasons it's so hard for them to deal with Israel, to walk away from this thing, is because that option is absolutely on the table. The problem that the United States has is that if Israel decides to go with the Samson option, which again goes back to this biblical reference, right, to Samson at the end of his life, he's in a temple, his hair's grown back, but he's blind now, and he asks a little boy to lead him to the center of the temple, and he asks God, if you give me strength one more time, and he pushes two pillars, and the pillars come falling down, the temple therein collapses, and the scripture says that in his death, that Samson kills more Philistines than he did in his entire life, right, in this one moment. And so that's kind of the concept here. Would Israel start a nuclear war? Absolutely, I think they would. I think there's no reason to believe that they wouldn't, based on everything that we have seen so far. Again, if you have a position where you have a stand-down order to say, let our people die because we can use this to our advantage. If you have a Hannibal directive that says, kill all the hostages, including our own soldiers, because we're not going to negotiate later. If you would do all of that, why would you not use nuclear weapons if you feel that you're cornered and you have no other option? And so I also believe that others in the region know that's true. That's the reason that I think the Iranians have stopped hitting Israel. Right, so the Iranians have taken a step back from, they couldn't continue to hit Israel with ballistic missiles. They could continue to hit Israel with hypersonic missiles because they absolutely have hypersonics. But why have they done that? Why have they stepped back from all this? And I think the reason that they have is because they know that if Israel is cornered and has no other way out, that will be the option, and they ultimately will deploy nuclear weapons. And we should point out that Pakistan has already said, if Israel uses a nuke, they use a nuke. North Korea has said, if Israel uses a nuke, we use a nuke. So we right now, you know, that, what is that, that, you know, doomsday clock toward midnight? I mean, we're closer than we've ever been. We're standing on the edge of where you literally have nuclear powers facing each other right now saying, who pulls the trigger first? Because if you do, I will.
Yes. And, you know, we exist in the United States. We don't know, you know, who would hit us, but we know that it could be a domino effect. And so it's really hard. It must be especially hard to live in those regions, especially for Israelis, knowing that their government has openly said, we will bring about nuclear destruction if we're losing. And that means you. That means it's coming towards us. I don't know how you go about your everyday life under a government with that doctrine. It must be incredibly anxietizing. What do you think? I'm just asking your sentiment here.
I think it sounds horrible, right? But I think we're starting to find ourselves living under that right now.
Yes.
Right? I mean, you vote for Trump, which I did 3 times, proudly. And now I look at it and think, the whole point of voting for him was so we would not be in this position. The point of voting for him is I truly believe that if Kamala Harris becomes president of the United States, we'll be facing a nuclear war with Russia. Mm-hmm. Now, instead, it feels like the U.S. is cornered because we started a war with Iran that we cannot win. And then you have conversations happening now about, well, maybe we use a tactical nuke, you know, with limited nuclear strike. Pandora's box, right? Once you open it, you can't put it back in. And so you cannot play with this idea, we'll just use a little nuke, we'll use a tactical nuke today is stronger than the atomic bombs that were used on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. It's not like we're just using a little nuke. And the idea that we're going to blow up Pickaxe Mountain or some location in Iran just to try to spook them, once you've done that, the whole world's on alert and everyone's ready to start firing at each other. And now it becomes what we used to call a Mexican standoff, right? Everybody's got their guns cocked and loaded. You just need one person to fire. Once one fires, you can't stop it. It's a chain reaction that takes place.
I prefer a Scottish goodbye where we just leave and don't tell anybody.
Well, that's a good one.
Can you do that from a Mexican standoff? A Scottish goodbye.
It would definitely be preferable. Just turn around, back out of the room, and say, we're leaving. We've got our own things to deal with, and we're not going to do this anymore.
Yes. I've perfected the Scottish goodbye. So, you know, and it's so interesting because if you paid attention during the election, you did, in fact, think that the Biden administration was escalating with Russia day by day. It very much felt like that. Yeah. And President Trump said, oh, I'm going to fix it. I'm friends with Putin. It's going to be all good. He wasn't telling the truth about the war, but at least he was making overtures. Mm. But he was very much like, Israel should stop this in Gaza. Mm-hmm. We should end it. But he never condemned as Israel. He was making waves about a possible war with Iran. So was J.D. Vance. Now, it's interesting because the threat in the Middle East is far bigger than the threat with Russia. Now, President Putin is facing pressure inside his own government for looking weak because he has failed to be aggressive enough to stop the war. The war is now, you know, we're 3-4 years in and still going. The Russians are tired of it. They supported it at first.
Yep.
Yeah. And so, you know, I guess it's really hard. I don't know. Should we blame ourselves for not putting this properly on the scale?
We're putting what on the scale?
Like what we weighed for putting Trump in office, because Kamala Harris did say everything was on the table for a war with Iran. Yeah. So like, I don't know. You know, there's a lot of influencers online who are like, you should have known Trump. And absolutely, I did know that Trump was dangerous in the Middle East. But I also was very afraid of another Democratic administration. So I don't think we should blame the electorate here, like the voters.
Yeah, I think that the problem is if we still have to go back in history and say, so where we are now with Iran is not good, right? It's a bad place to be. But where we could have been, I'd rather be in the position we're in right now dealing with Iran, who is essentially beating us in a war of attrition because we ran out of missiles, can't fight anymore. Now Trump's like, economic D-Day, that's what's next. Listen, how do you know you're out of missiles? It's when you now say, instead of blowing you up, we're going to sanction you more. And now you'll really feel it. Okay, got it. So I guess the reports that we've been doing about how we don't have enough missiles actually are accurate, because that makes no sense. But I would rather be in that position than where I think NATO was pushing us, which was an actual conflict with Russia. The good thing about Iran is Iran can't hit us, so they can make life very difficult in the Middle East. They can force our bases to basically be shut down and keep U.S. soldiers out of that region. They can do that. They can hold the Strait of Hormuz for a while. They can do that. Eventually, they'll charge tolls. It'll be back open. But the difference between that and what we risked in facing a nuclear-armed Russia that has more nuclear weapons than any other country on the planet by a significant number, I'd rather be in the position we're in now. So I guess I'll tell myself it was the right choice.
Okay. I mean, I don't know what we're going to do next, because, you know, it's clear to everyone that the warmongers are in charge of the Uniparty. But what concerns me is this idea that, you know, we're not going to lose in Iran and then go, boy, we just shouldn't do that anymore. Although there are some reports that now the Trump administration is considering reducing presence in the region. Ugh. We possibly could say, boy, we lost. We should never do that again. And then dedicate our entire society to the pursuit of war, where all resources go towards building bombs, all educational and everything, right? And then we live in like post-apocalyptic Hunger Games, Star Wars, Terminator, where it's just our whole society is towards making sure this never happens again, 1984. Maybe I just consume too much science fiction, but that's what I'm afraid of, you know, from this devastating loss. What do you think?
I think it's actually the opposite. I think you'll have the opposite effect, which is, so in some ways, you know, Trump promised that he was going to end the forever wars. What if he actually did? Not meaning to, but what if he actually did? In that the public's appetite to continue with this kind of war, the public's appetite for this kind of mess is essentially gone, right? People are done with it. They're sick and tired of it. This is the most unpopular war from its outset of any war in U.S. history, which means that the public from the beginning it was already underwater saying, no, not again. We don't want to do this. The positive of that is now that because we gave away so many missiles to Ukraine, who blew through all those stockpiles, PAC-3 instead, missiles, all the interceptors are gone. The fact that they've burned through all that and we have so little left, yes, there's going to be a big push to say we've got to restock, but that's going to happen either way. I don't think what will happen is that the country becomes obsessed with we've just got to arm ourselves and be prepared, because the truth is nothing that we've had in the last few years has been for defense. Americans are all for defense. I believe that. I am. I'm all about we should have enormous stockpiles of defensive weapons and drones now. And yeah, I'm all for it. But I don't want to take those stockpiles and then use them to destroy countries around the world. That's the mistake that we've been making. And so my hope is that this has put not just Trump and the Trump administration, but it's put every lawmaker in such a bad position where not only is the appetite not there, but the capability to continue to do this has now run out. It's going to take decades to restock the missiles we've gone through. As an example, PAC-3s, right, which are the interceptors using the Patriots. It takes 2 years to build one, and we build only 1,000 a year. Raytheon, I think, makes part of it. Lockheed Martin makes part of it. Those two companies have an ambitious plan to increase the number from 1,000 a year to 3,000 a year by the year 2030. And that's how slow this process is. So, you know, right now Pete Hegseth's going around saying, hey, we need this one-time generational investment of a $1.5 trillion defense budget. I just don't think there's any appetite for it. I think the public doesn't like it. I think you push that going into the midterms, that's the best way to lose seats in the House and the Senate, is push for, we need massive, massive investment into war. We're, Americans are done with that.
Well, I like your optimism. I do. But the problem with that is that they get it anyway. They ask for a defense budget that's massive and they get it, you know. Yep. And so we cannot support it. But I don't see a massive fallout from politicians. But we haven't been through the midterm, so maybe we'll just wait and see. We just don't know. We just don't know.
No.
So I'm going to take one more quick break, and then I want to ask you, what do you think the reaction has been or should be to this new leaked footage of that showing that clearly Israel was complicit and does not protect their own people in October 7th? So maybe you can think about that during the break, and then I'll see how you feel. I want to tell you about Red Life, which is red light therapy. Now, you may have noticed that recently I'm wearing my reading glasses less and less to host the show. That's because I have been diligent with my red light therapy. Now, you can find out all about this by going to myredlight.com/redacted. You know, it is regular red light therapy. If you have not seen our interview with Jonathan Otto, you need to watch it, because he walks us through the actual research behind LED therapy. It's not hype, it's actual peer-reviewed studies. So we've been trying it in this house. We're pretty diligent with it, and we got one of his panels. We use this regularly, and within just a few weeks, I am using my reading glasses less and less, almost never with my phone, not to read a book, very rarely when I'm doing my work. So check it out for yourself. I can't say enough about it. Go to myredlight.com/redacted. Again, use the code redacted25 for 25% off a single device, or if you want 30% off a bundle, use the code redacted30. These codes won't be up forever. Check it out for yourself. One more time, it's myredlight.com/redacted. The codes are redacted25 or redacted30. For whatever it is you're choosing to buy, check it out. I'm excited for you to feel the benefits to myredlight.com/redacted. So wrapping up, I really appreciate you talking to me today. I just want to ask you, what do you think the reaction has been or should be to this new footage? Again, proving you've been right all along. Israel was complicit in October 7th, did not protect their people, continues to not do so. There should be a Zionist fallout, but unfortunately the influencer energy is just too strong. You know, how do we get the attention of the world to this?
I think the world would pay attention to it. Unfortunately, I think lawmakers don't care at the end of the day. In fact, I think there is a certain level of lawmaker in the United States that would actually be very excited by this idea, right? They would be all for a Hannibal directive here in the U.S. Yeah, absolutely. You can take hostages. We'd rather kill the hostages. We don't negotiate with terrorists, right? That very tough Jack Bauer kind of mentality.
The whole line from the Obama administration is we have to go to war with Syria because they attack their own people. We say we don't like it, but Israel does it. All good. Totally fine.
Yeah. Well, Saddam Hussein was the same thing, right?
Yes.
He gassed his own people. Gaddafi, he kills his own people.
Yes.
Israel kills their own people. The difference is between all those groups is that this one you can actually prove. I never saw any proof that Assad killed his own people or that Hussein killed his own people.
Right.
So this is where we are.
Yeah. And so, you know, I guess the most we can do is talk about it and break the narrative that Israel's our greatest ally and that, you know, they were 100% the victims of October 7th and that this war of aggression was justified. That's all we can do. You know, how people pick up that information is, I guess, beyond our control. We're just journalists.
But people are changing, right? The public sentiment on this stuff. Look, I was talking about Israel funding Hamas back in 2012. And in 2012, all those groups like the ADL and different groups were coming out against me. He's anti-Semitic and he's, you know, a Jew hater and a Holocaust denier. All of that stuff's been proven today. And one thing that has changed is not just public sentiment, but the ability of the public to get information thanks to places like X, where you can get information, you can get facts that are unfiltered to you. The public sentiment is changing, and generationally, it has shifted entirely in another direction to the point where Israel has lost the United States. All we're waiting for now is it to time out, but it's over. This is like watching a football game where the score is so far ahead that you're like, there's no way you're coming back. But there's still time on the clock, so we got to wait for that to run out. That's literally what Israel's experiencing right now in the United States. There is no salvaging your reputation. There is no convincing people that no, you're actually good. What we're waiting for is boomers who don't care about anybody but themselves and who are going to hold fast to whatever belief system they've been on. They have to die off, and the next generation has to get a little bit older, and another one comes along. But within the next decade, like, Israel's done. They're finished here. And that's why they're shifting their attention onto India right now, because they need to go find a new nuclear-armed patsy to do their bidding.
Sugar daddy. Yeah, exactly right. Right. Is there any other way to see it? Well, I always enjoy talking to you. I really appreciate your time. Find Ben online at BenSwan_. That's the X handle. And his show is called America Now. Got that right. So thank you again. It's always a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you, Natalie.